another episode of Full Court Press, brought to you by Geek Vibes Nation. I'm your host, Nick Smith, and joining me tonight is Luke Alves. What up, Luke?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Pretty good, man. Like, it's been kind of a hectic week. A lot of crazy NBA stories going on. A lot of interesting fights. We broke down the fights on Tuesday, so that was pretty. And you know what's funny about that is, I out of the three of us, like, nobody really cared to really talk about Ibaka, like choking and like throwing punches at Marquise Chris. I mean, obviously, the bigger stories were Westbrook versus the Utah fans and James Dolan versus his own team's fans. But anyway, let's get into – we're going to be breaking down our latest mock draft. We're just going to go with the current seeding. I really want to get one in, Luke, where we just simulate the lottery and go with that, before the end of the season, because that's always fun. It always kind of throws a wrinkle into the system. But we'll see if we have an opportunity to do that. But for tonight, we're going to be doing the top 14 picks, the lottery, and we're just going to keep the team slated where they are currently. Of course, we all know this could change. And with the altered draft odds, the likelihood that it does change is even greater than it has been in the past. So it's going to be really interesting to see where everybody sits once the lottery is conducted after the regular season. But let's jump into it. I'm going to take odds. Luke's going to take evens. And we'll just kind of go from there. So with the first pick, obviously, for the Knicks, it's such an obvious choice. Zion Williamson, clear number one overall pick for any team that gets number one. But particularly if you're the Knicks, simply because it gives you so much flexibility. You get KD and Kyrie, or KD and Kemba, or KD and any other really solid player or group of players to join the squad. You can either keep him and grow him with that squad. You can use him in a trade to trade for, say, Anthony Davis. If you don't get KD and subsequently don't get other free agents, he still fits in perfectly with your roster. And you just run a unit of, Dennis Smith, probably Lonzo Trier, Kevin Knox, and just tell him to stop shooting 14 shots a game. Zion Williamson and Mitchell Robinson. Spacing would definitely be an issue between Zion and Mitchell Robinson. But I think it'll take a couple seasons, but I expect Zion to develop an outside game. He already shoots, threes at Duke. He's just not very efficient at it. And it's not something he's really had to incorporate into his game to this point. He seems to have the drive to want to be great, and I think he could incorporate that into his game for sure. But also, regardless, that's going to sell tickets. Not that the Knicks need to, but maybe you could charge a little bit more for those tickets, if you're good old James Dolan. But anyway, your thoughts on Zion being the clear number one, Luke, and then feel free to take the floor when you're ready for Phoenix.
Well, real quick on this, I mean, we all know Zion, he's just what he is and just, generational, could be a generational player and all that. But here's my thing with the Knicks getting the number one pick. Do you think that this is more of like a, not like a blessing in disguise, but just like more of like, I can't think of the term, but it's just like more of a headache in the end, because every other team that gets it, if the Suns getting it, Zion, if the Hawks get it, it's Zion, the Bulls get it, it's Zion, Cavs Zion, but Knicks are in that, like, yeah, you're drafting Zion, but are you trading him? So it's just like they're the only team where it's just like it's not clear, like, we're getting Zion, we're going to build around him now, everything's going to be marked around Zion, we got Zion
right.
and all that. Well, the Knicks,
right.
on the other hand, they get that number one pick, and now they're just like, oh, snap, like, you know, we're going to trade them. We could trade them that night and then, you know, jump. But, you know, they all teams have to wait till July 1st for free agency. So it's just like, I feel like the Knicks are that one
well, they
team
won't
right
trade
now
that
where
night.
It's just like, no, yeah, they wouldn't do it unless it was just like, it'd be very crazy. But it's just Zion's one of those, like, picks, like, for the Knicks, I just feel like where it's like, or just getting the number one pick, it's like, it's a great thing, and they're probably excited, you know, and all that, but there's just so much more going behind than just being like, we just got
sure.
Zion, and he's going to be on our team for the next 8 years. Because it's not going to be like that.
Right.
The whole story is going to be like, is he going to stay? Who will they pair
right.
in, like, in New York and, like
right.
all that? So I just see the storyline
well,
a lot different than
you.
Every other team.
Yeah, let me ask you this, because, I mean, I think it's interesting. Let's say they get KD, and then either Kemba or Kyrie. So one of those two. Like, if Kyrie decides to stay in Boston, I think they get Kemba. Like, I mean, it's the reports have come out from Charlotte that he's not happy. They're probably not going to make the playoffs again. So I think if you're the Knicks and you sign KD, getting Kemba is a very worthwhile backup to Kyrie, backup plan to Kyrie Irving. And there's even a lot of Knicks fans out there who would, I shit you not, would rather have Kemba Walker, namely because of the knee injury. But also I've heard some people say that it makes more sense because you have a clear number one option, number two option system, whereas if you get Kyrie in there, it's more of a 1A, 1B thing, and then maybe you have a similar problem to what you had in Golden State with him and Steph. I see it. I don't see that. I see it completely differently. But anyway, my question, if you get KD and one of those two point guards, do you keep Zion or do you trade him if you can get Anthony Davis?
See, here's my thing.
And mind you,
hold on.
And mind you this, like, because in order to make that room, in order to, like, make come up with the necessary salary allotment, you're going to have to trade at least two, maybe even three others with him just to make the money work. So it's like you don't have the option of just trading Zion for him, which I would do. It's the question is, are you willing to trade Zion and give up all your young depth to have three all-star players, but then nobody else on your roster?
No, I wouldn't do it just because, like you were saying, it's not even like just matching the money. It's just like you're gutting your whole team. And, like, don't get me wrong, that big three would be nasty, whoever it is. But there's a lot more that goes, like, you can see it now. And, like, the big threes aren't doing it now. You need a complete team. You need a solid bench.
Right.
Like, you're seeing these teams like the Clippers and the Pacers and all that. And even Toronto, even though they have Kawhi, it's like Toronto still just got a lot of,
they
like,
so
they have all
depth.
The other players that can play. They have so much depth.
They made the trade at the right time too. Like, you know, and they gave up the right parts. They weren't so quick to give up Siakam or Anunoby. Like, exactly. Yeah. Depth is super fucking important.
So that's what I'm saying. So I wouldn't do it if I was the Knicks, I would just, you know, Zion and KD and whoever, you know, we're going to make it work. And then maybe trade for some, like, other role players. Like, you could still trade, like, Frank Ntilikina and maybe Knox and something else and get you something that's not, like, you know, it's not a superstar.
How
but
about this?
He's definitely that
trade
a player that can.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, how about this? Trade Dennis and, let's say, Dennis and we'll say Kevin Knox. And I know if Juwan and Joel were on here now, they would just have a fucking heart attack. Hear me out from an objective perspective here, Luke. Trade the two of those guys for Robert Covington. 3-and-D guy, proven starter. Can help anchor your defense alongside KD. Can play both the 3 and the 4. Like, I think that would be, like, an awesome trade. Like, get a role player like that to go along with Zion and KD and those guys. Like, somebody like that, I think, would make a lot of sense. you know, for that squad, more so than trading everybody and Zion for KD. Like, you know, keep Alonzo Trier, keep a Mitchell Robinson, because those guys are going to help you out, you know, down the stretch of, you know, a playoff run.
No, yeah, I mean, that's a perfect player. I mean, I don't think Minnesota would trade him because just Robin coming, but that's what I'm saying. Like, get a role player like a Covington that is just your all-around just utility guy, like, doing everything for you. He's mm-hmm. in the grit and grind for you. Like, it's almost like, even though, like, he's not like it anymore, but, like, Eric Gordon kind of for Houston for a while there, just, like, he's always that, like, kind of like that roller player. It's just like,
sure.
Gordon's kind of doing it for the – but all that, but – you know, it's just, I wouldn't trade everything away to build around it's New York and you'd rather sell the 80, KD, Kyrie, or Kimba than, you know, that's just an easier sell, the big three we have, but I just don't think it would be as good. So that's why only objection to just trading. For,
yeah.
Yes, it makes sense and it'd be cool, but I just not basketball sense when every team is very deep in the East. It's not like you're hopping into a very bad East anymore from what it's looking like.
Right. And like, I would just rather have like Lonzo Trier, Zion and Mitchell Robinson, you know, and still having Knox and Ntilikina to come off the bench, or maybe you start Ntilikina for his defense and then at the two, and then you have Trier coming off the bench since he can shoot and score. You just have a lot more flexibility, whereas, you know, if you trade all those guys away to get Anthony Davis, like, I mean, what, you don't have any flexibility. You have three really good guys, but you need five really good guys to close out a basketball game. So, or you need five good guys. Some of them can be great, but you don't want any guys that are shitty being on the floor. I mean, we saw that happen. We saw the frustration on KD's face his last year in OKC when he would pass the ball to a wide open Andre Roberson and Roberson would not shoot it because he can't fucking shoot. And that's not even saying Roberson is a bad player. Cause of course he's a great defensive player. But you know, like you want more versatility. So, I mean, it's the same reason that I said that, last episode that I think the Lakers are being stupid if they're going to use all their money on, you know, all their free agency money on a guy like Kimba or a guy like Jimmy Butler and then trade away all of their youth to get Anthony Davis. Like, if your plan is to try to trade for Anthony Davis, then you should be looking at using your $40 plus million in cap space, if you spread it out the right way, to get 3-and-D role players. So that way you can have AD, LeBron, and then surround those guys with guys like Patrick Beverley or Danny Green, Trevor Ariza, Dwayne Dedmon, you know, players of that ilk, Terrence Ross. Go after people like that so you can still have a fucking roster that works. You know, I don't like the notion of giving away all of your depth just to have three all-stars. I don't think it wins you a championship in today's league. But, hey, we could be wrong, but we got to move on. Phoenix Suns, number 2 pick, who you got?
So Phoenix Suns, hopefully, you know, this is an obvious pick for you. I mean, like, they're the one team, like,
yeah,
Orlando, that you know they've been fishing, like, looking for a point guard. So you're hopefully, like, Ja Morant, and that's what I'm going with. But knowing the Phoenix organization, they love their wings, and it's R.J. Barrett. In reality, like, I just know it. I deep down know inside. That it's somehow going to be RJ Barrett. It's like, okay, just add five more wings. Just please, just keep on adding more wings. We'll figure it out later.
It's like the opposite of what they used to be when they had like four quality point guards at any given season.
Yeah, I think they just got sick of like, we had too many point guards. Now we need wings. So, but Morant makes the most sense right here. I mean, he has just been really killing it. I'm glad he's going to be in the NCAA tournament. So a lot of people now be able to. No, I mean, there's the basketball heads that know who he is and, like, you know, that. But there's going to be a lot of people that, especially if he gets, like, a crazy upset win and all that. But he's really good. And it's not just on the offensive end. Like, he's really good on defense. He's athletic. He shows it. I mean, he's pretty good for his size. So you'd be pairing him up with Booker, who I think would be really good for, like, Devin Booker and all that. and definitely be able to play with DeAndre Ayton. So you could build off of that. That's your young core. I mean, he's been really still leading the league in assists, so it just makes sense. His size too, I like. He's not like a smaller point guard and all that. He's pretty big when you look at him, and just I don't know. His athleticism. He's just done some things, like he's dunked on some people. He's done this. He's done some blocks on some people. I'm just like, man, this guy just keeps on proving
really
to me
good.
Like. And it's crazy because at the beginning of the year, R.J. Barrett was looked at the number one pick, and that's why it's funny that we, like, laugh about the Suns, but it's not like you're getting a bad person, R.J. I mean, he was looked at as the, consensus number one coming into the year. I mean, you had Zion
pretty much
and all his hype and on all that, but it was just like you didn't – like, you only knew his game was dunking. You didn't know how special he was until we saw him in Duke. But, like, R.J.'s always had that, like, the hype behind him, and it's just like – there's another person that's about to jump him, and it's deserving because he's really good and he's made his team. I mean, he's in division, he's in double A, but he doesn't play he plays lesser opponents. But I mean, Belmont was still a pretty good team. I mean, if you watch that tournament, he made the game winner to send his team going into the finals and all that. So it's just like, he looks like he has all the tangibles to be a really good point guard. And that can help you. And especially if you win two games in NCAA, because that's what the tournament's about. It's about point guards and being a great guard. So if you can win two games with that team, I think it might even jump them up even more, secured number two. And, like, teams that even have a point guard, like the Cavs, could reconsider, or getting Sexton some help and all that, just because he's just that good.
Yeah, I mean, he really is. It's interesting because there's like, two opposite narratives about him that I agree with, but I hear a lot, is one, he's a mid-major guy. He hasn't played against anybody. Like, that's why he's putting up these numbers, yada, yada, yada. And to that, it's like, dude, there were plenty of mid-major guys. I mean, Damian Lillard was a mid-major guy who obviously went on to be one of the best point guards in the NBA. Paul George was a mid-major guy, and is, probably going to finish third in MVP voting this year. So, that argument is not sufficient. And especially I like what Damian Lillard came out and kind of pointed out. And he said, look, if you get a guy performing on this level as a mid-major, that really kind of points to essentially him being on a level even higher than some other that you might even perceive some other players, because he's having everything thrown at him because he doesn't have the necessary help. It's kind of the same thing as Trae Young last year. Once these teams kind of figured him out, they would trap him and do everything else and kind of really threw him off for the latter half of the season. And you kind of have that same thing with Ja, and he's just still performing. Like, he's still being able to get after it. Now, granted, the athletes that he's going against aren't as good, but the schemes are trying to shut him down every single night. And we saw, I forgot the biggest mid-major name, Steph Curry, Davidson. We saw it with him. So that narrative is played out, and people need to just kind of retire that. Sure, that works for a lot of people, but not somebody who's this good. I hear a lot of people saying, dude, he could be the next Russell Westbrook. He's the next Russell Westbrook. And I see where they're coming from, because like you said, Luke, he's a little bigger. He's not that tall. He's like 6'3", 6'2", 6'3". Westbrook's what, 6'4"? He's about the same height. But Westbrook's size, man, like, Jaw's got a good build to him, but Westbrook is just, like, he's got to really work at it to get to Westbrook size. I do see some of the athletic comps there, I would just say, let's not get carried away in that sort of regard. There are a couple things that concern me about him. His shot's kind of funny. I think he's actually left-handed. but he shoots right-handed, and he's actually even said something about that. But he kind of shoots the ball with two hands. It's weird. It's kind of a weird shot. But he makes it work for him to a certain degree. But I think he's going to have to kind of figure that out long-term. You know, we've seen players go through this. Obviously, Kawhi Leonard's a great example of what a really good coaching staff and shooting coach can do for you. The Suns, unfortunately, don't seem to have any sort of, you know, good things in that regard anymore. But nevertheless, I mean, he fits every need that they have. So, yeah, I mean, I would definitely take him there. Makes too much sense. It probably makes too much sense for them to take him. But nevertheless, it's the smart pick. And one other thing, I will say this. If there's one thing that I feel like really, like, leans into me thinking they'll take him, it's that they took Ayton last year, and the reason they took Ayton was because, in my opinion, was because they knew they needed a center, and they didn't know what Luka was. They didn't know what position he was. So they were like, is he a point guard? Is he a combo guard? Is he a point forward? Like, where do we play him? How does he fit? All of those questions. But they knew they needed a center, so they took the center. So maybe they know they need a point guard, they take the point guard. I don't know. We'll see. But moving on, Cleveland at number three, definitely R.J. Barrett. That's no question. I definitely don't see Barrett falling out of the top three, just in my opinion. He's got way, way too much upside. He is a versatile wing player who can kind of do everything. He actually reminds me a lot of Brandon Ingram, which obviously playing for Duke, being a guy with his kind of build, was height really, more so than his build. I think he's a little bit bigger than Ingram. But, like, you know, his ability to playmake, we haven't really seen a lot of it lately without Zion. It seems like he doesn't really trust his teammates very much. But, you know, I mean, somewhat for good reason. I mean, Trey Jones can't hit threes, and the only other person he's got on his team who's been reliable is Reddish. So, you know, I think that's kind of put a stunt to some of his playmaking ability. But we have seen it throughout the season. He's been solid. He can score the ball. You need to get him engaged on defense, but he's got all the athletic ability to you know, be able to be a good defender. He's just a guy who has all of those intangibles that you would want in a top three pick, and I just don't think you can pass on him if he falls to if you're Cleveland and he falls to you at three, especially considering that your biggest need right now is a wing player. I mean, you've got Love, you've got Sexton, you have Clarkson's been playing pretty well. You got like four point guards. You know, I mean, I think it's just that's where you need somebody the most, because the only real wing player that you have right now is Jetty, who you're going to have on the roster next season because they're going to waive JR. Yeah, I mean, I just think it just 100% makes sense. Get him in there, start getting him some reps with Sexton, and just see where that kind of young duo can go with, you know, Love, you know, trying to kind of be the leader of that squad.
No, yeah, I mean, it makes the most sense. I mean, he'd definitely bring a lot to the table and help out the Cavs too. I mean, I think he'd fit really well around Sexton and Love to just build around that young core, and you could throw all the athletic guys. I mean, they could possibly come back. I mean, I don't understand Cleveland. Like, I had them go like being in the playoffs this year just because I just didn't think they'd drop off. But it's Cleveland, and they're really good at dropping off. So when they wanted to commit to it, they did. So
well,
but
and Love
like,
getting hurt, you know.
Yeah, Love getting hurt some big time. But I think he actually looked really healthy now, and I think him not having to play in the playoffs and getting his body right, he'll be good for next year. So that's why I like just the Sexton, RJ, Love like that's your three and that's who you're going to build around, because Sexton and RJ can definitely create for others. And Love's pretty good at passing as well and rebound. So I think it makes sense. Like we were saying, RJ's got a lot of skills. He likes to go to his left hand a lot. Hopefully, you know, he's been trying to do it in college. It's not going as much, but you can notice whenever it's like crunch time or I need a bucket or I need to get it, he just goes that side. So that's my only concern, that they're going to figure that out. So hopefully he can, but he's just really good going to the left. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. I was thinking that with this order right now, could this, like, real quick, I'm just like, could this draft be like the most tradable team draft? I mean, with this order, I mean, all three of these teams in front of me, I could see trading their picks and all that or doing something else. Like we're saying, like Phoenix could definitely, I mean, if John Morant's not the guy, and I could see them trading, you know, maybe trying to get that point guard for them. So,
well, you know what's interesting?
Or moving in and out of like the, like to move down and like switch with a team that's like, I need John Morant.
Well, or think about this, and I don't know how much of a possibility this is for all parties considered, but what if you're one of those top three teams, if you're Phoenix or Chicago, what's the likelihood that you're like, you call up the Lakers and you say, look, I'll give you the number three pick or the number two pick for Lonzo and some sort of conditional asset, some minor asset, like maybe Mo Wagner, maybe get Mo Wagner in that deal too. And the only reason I say that is because if you look at Phoenix or Chicago on paper, they both need point guards, and both of their shooting guards are not very good defenders. And Lonzo is a really good defender. Obviously he's got his shooting woes, and he's, you know, hasn't been able to stay healthy. So you have to take that in mind. But I would say, especially if you're Chicago or Phoenix and you miss on Ja Morant, like if you're the team that doesn't get Ja Morant out of those two, then I think even more so you're thinking about, I wonder if we can get Lonzo Ball. And maybe if you're LA, you're thinking, well, maybe somebody would, you know, maybe we'll have some more versatility trading with a trade package centered around a Cam Reddish or an RJ Barrett than we will Alonzo Ball. I don't know. I do think you're right. I do think that there could be a lot of various trades at hand, you know, in this draft, just because, you know, there's going to be a lot of teams with specific needs and teams looking to maybe make draft acquisitions, looking forward to the free agent market and the trade market, that I think will affect a lot of these decisions.
Yeah, I just think, especially with this current order, I just see, like, you know, if it were to land like this in the way that the draft, I could just see a lot of teams wanting to move and not being a big deal, like to move down and get more and all that, or going to go get a Lonzo or another like vet and switch your picks. That's why I just like kind of brought it up. But with the Bulls coming up next, it puts them in the, like, this is another, like how you were just saying, how you threw them in there. Like you missed out on John Morant, which every team knows you really need a point guard because Levine and Dunn aren't really doing it for you. And then there's a lot of wings that like in this draft that you could go with the Reddish or, you know, or Nazir Little and all that. But I've been really thinking, I mean, that they've got the 4 and 5 covered, so they don't need that.
Right.
But, you know, you kind of need a shooting guard. I mean, the point guard, you don't want to reach in. It stinks that he got injured in Garland, that we can't really see what, you know, his game's like. But, I'm going to go with Jared Culver out of Texas Tech. I just think, really good. He's pretty long. He can score. They're a very good defensive team, so he understands that. He can bring that to your table. I mean, just help him in that shooting guard position. I don't think they have, like I'm saying, the Dunn and Levine thing's not working. I think Levine should just go to being a six man and a good six man, but I don't think right now he'd accept that. But I think he'll thrive better if he'd be doing a six man role. And
I think
Dunn
he would be a great
healthy
six man.
Yeah,
I really do. I think he could be a Lou Williams type.
Oh, yeah, he would slash people apart. I mean, especially, like you're saying, he could definitely do it, but I just don't think his ego would want it. But, I mean, if it were to work, especially even if you put Culver in there starting him with a young kid, he'd just come out and instantly, you know, he can get you some buckets. He's kind of fallen off here and there. He's had an up and down kind of a year. I mean, you could just expect that out of any young kid and all that, especially in the Texas Tech's been in there the whole time. I mean, it is a whole team for them, but they've been in the top. They've been in the top 10. They definitely, I mean, and he's been like, there's been a lot of games I've looked at that box score. I'm like, he's got no help. He's got one person that had double digits in this game and they won. It's just like, and they're a great defensive team and that helps, but it's like, you need some other people night in and night out to also get you some buckets, but he's always been the looked at guy. So I just think he'd be really good for the Bulls. A point guard is what they need, but I think a shooting guard is also, and he'd just be good. He's pretty, I don't think he's that tall, like, but if you look at him, he just looks like lengthy, like he just looks pretty big for his position.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got reach. He does look big, like he's listed at 6'5", but he does play bigger than that. I love Jarrett Culver. Like he's, in fact, we have pretty much gone 1 through 4 on my big board right now. And that's just been how it shook out with the team needs. But he's my 4th overall prospect right now. I currently have him above Cam Reddish. I love him. I think he's great. There's apparently from Danny Chow, but it might have been Jonathan Sharks over at the Ringer. There's some kind of silent brouhaha that he may be taller than 6'5", or he may still be growing. If that's the case and he grows to be 6'6", 6'7", and, you know, with his length already being, you know, like better than average, I definitely think there's a lot of flexibility with a player like that. You see it with a guy like Bazemore on the Hawks, like, granted, you know, no great talent or anything, but a good player. And he's only 6'5", but he can play the 2 and he can play the 3. Because of his length, his athleticism, that the 3 is becoming. There was a time in the NBA when it seemed like if you were 6'5", you couldn't play the 3 anymore. Like you had to be a 2. Now you can, especially if you have length. The way this kind of small ball trend is going, and you know, I mean, I just think that I think he, even if he doesn't grow anymore, I think you could see him playing the 3. I think the 2 would be the best spot for him. But I think he has that flexibility to where you could put him out there at the 3 and feel comfortable. And I agree. I think his shot just looks fluid. He kind of started off a little rough, but he's definitely gotten better throughout the course of the season. I haven't seen the last few games, so I'm not sure about where he sits at currently. But I know – when I was projecting a lot of my big boards, the last one I did was early January. I've been trying to kind of keep track of it since then. And it's been since then that I bumped him up to 4. His percentages have just steadily grown. They've steadily gotten better throughout the course of the season. I think he's underlooked. Like he's not grouped in with those top 4 players. And I think he should be there. I think this should be a discussion of who are the clear number top 5 best players instead of top 4 best players, and his name should be thrown in that top 5. I like the pick. I mean, obviously, I like LaVine as a bench guy. I don't think you bring in Culver to be a starter immediately. I think you would have to bring him off the bench to start, but that's not a problem. But I think if you're looking long-term, you could transition those 2 positions and just hope that LaVine buys in and just say, hey, man, like maybe try to fucking call up Lou Williams and just be like, hey, can you talk to him about this? Like talk to him about, you know, getting, you know, kind of benched behind Allen Iverson and how that changed the trajectory of your career and, what that meant, you know, and how you embraced it and everything. Like, maybe you can make that work. I mean, it just depends. But, like, LaVine's defensive woes certainly kind of make him better projected to be a six-man on a true contender. Now, does Chicago want to be a true contender? I mean, everybody does, but are they gung-ho on that, or are they content with just being a playoff team? My instincts tell me they're content with just being a playoff team. But, you know, time will tell. All right, number five. After all that being said about how much I love Jarrett Culver, I'll be remiss if I didn't try to proposition you with the Hawks pick. Since this is my team and I'm picking for my team, I really like Culver. I would love to have him and Reddish. I will take Darius Garland and give you additional assets to go along with Darius Garland in exchange for Culver. Let me start with the asset, the main asset being I will give you OKC's 2022 second or first round pick, which is top 14 protected, and I will give you number 40 and number 43 pick in this draft. So that's a future first round pick, granted a distant future first, and two mid second round picks, 40 and 43, plus Darius Garland, the point guard that you need, and then take back Jarrett Culver. As Bulls GM, what say you, Luke?
For me, I would counter you quickly and just be like, well, what about that Cleveland pick? Just because in the end, I could just be getting a lot of seconds out of you, a lot of four. I could be getting the Marcus All 4 seconds out of you because the 1-14, you know, it could, you know, they could. It's protected all that.
Yeah, Russ is
Cleveland pick. Just me being the Bulls and, like, hopefully he's smart. I'm just like, you know, that's a great, like, trade package. Especially, I mean, you know, I'm not losing, like, a general. I'm not losing, like, an RJ and all that. Hopefully, I mean, Cleveland could turn out to that. But right now, and, you know, I do need a point guard, but I want to get the best assets so that I would look and just be like, what about that Cleveland
one? So you're
one?
Thinking,
I don't...
So you're thinking the Cleveland pick because if it, even if they end up in the top 10 again this year, it converts into 2 seconds, and Cleveland doesn't look like they're going to be good anytime soon. So you'd rather have 2 seconds from Cleveland sooner rather than the possibility of having 2 seconds from OKC way down the line. Is that kind of where your head's at?
Kind of. I mean, that and just thinking like if Cleveland got RJ, I'm hopefully thinking that you're somewhat of a decent team in the East. And
so you're banking on getting 11 or 12.
I'm banking on, I think it's a 1-8 protected, I thought. I don't know if it was a 1-10
no,
still.
10.
So that's why. Okay. Well, you know, yeah, I'm banking on that. Hopefully I'm still in the lottery with that pick. So I'm getting another lottery asset out of it. I mean, how you guys kind of did with Dallas last year. I mean, even though 1-5 is a lot better of a protection. But just, you know, going off that, like, Cleveland's bad, but hopefully they won't be that bad if Kevin Love's healthy, Sexton, and now R.J. Barrett's on that team and, you know, what they're able to do. So that's what I'm just banking off of. Like, I could get the best first-round pick out of this situation than a late first-round from if the OKC doesn't convey to 2 seconds. I'm getting, like, the late first-round pick. It's like,
right,
okay.
Yeah, because if they're good, they're still going to be good. Right.
But
yeah.
Also,
no, I mean,
the Garland
thing
makes it tricky. It's because, like, no one's seen him play. So that's also.
Right.
I need to see Garland.
Yeah. Play. Yeah, I know. I get that. I honestly, like, if push came to shove, I'd give you both. I'd give you the Cleveland one and the OKC one. So you get Cleveland, you know, both of them could, but I mean, both picks, you could end up getting 2 or 4 second round picks out of them, but like potentially most likely one of those is going to hit as a first. And they're spaced out enough to where, they're interesting assets to be able to do stuff with, or the OKC one is interesting to be able to use as some kind of trading chip, even if you like don't keep it. And then you get the Cleveland pick. So how's that? I'll give you the Cleveland pick and the OKC pick, both protected, but I'll give you both of those and Garland to get Culver.
I know. Culver's already in Atlanta for you. I flew him down first class. I bought him a jersey. you didn't even know. You didn't even know he's already on your team. I definitely do that. I mean, there's no reason not to do it. Like I'm saying, not that saying Culver can't get there, but it's not like these generational players where it's like, you know, you're getting possibly three first-round picks for the guy just to move one spot back to get the point guard that you possibly kind of wanted the whole time, but you didn't want to reach on him as of this point in time. Like, they could still possibly reach on him and all that. You've seen it, like, time and time. I mean, not saying that he was a reach, but it was like the D'Angelo Russell kind of, like, came up out of nowhere and jumped up into, like, the number two pick. So, like, point guards sometimes jump up out of nowhere, especially they have a good NCAA. Well, he's not going to be in there, but they have a good combine. So, I mean, you've got him on your team. But so I'm guessing that's – so right now Culver's going to be on the Hawks. So with the following pick, you said you wanted Cam Reddish, and he does make sense.
Don't
get me wrong.
Do this to me, motherfucker. Do not take that in Hayes right now.
I want to take Cam Reddish for you. But
you
here's just
take
hear me
Cam
out.
Reddish.
But just hear me out. I'm taking Cam Reddish, but it's not because you wanted him, because it makes sense. But I do think that in due time they should get a defensive center to play around Colin.
Sure.
Not and you know that, but I'm not reaching
There's
on
plenty
my
of those
homie.
In free agency.
Even though I'm very high on my guy Hayes, I'm not that high on him yet. Now, if he does some crazy stuff and all that, I could. But right now, Cam Reddish actually has done some things that wow me. It's not like he made the big leap and all that. It's kind of funny that you said Barrett reminded you of Ingram. I thought Cam kind of reminded me of Ingram. Like he kind
of
showed that at times. And like
either one of
when he kind of needs to, when he kind of needs to step it up, he kind of did it. Like when LeBron went down, and then he kind of disappeared. But he has like, you know, Ingram had like two games where it was like 34 points and dominant, but then he like disappeared. And Cam Reddish, too, I mean, that whole comeback against Louisville, that's not happening if Cam Reddish – and Zion's out there. And that's not happening unless Cam Reddish is, like, just going in the zone and hitting some threes for him. And then and even when Zion's been out. So, yeah, it's just – Atlanta just hit gold right here if they're able to pull out the Culver Reddish. I mean, you – now it comes to the debate. You've got to see these guys play. Now it comes to the debate. Who won that trade, Nick? If you come out with Reddish and Jared Culver, and right now the way
to
Young
go along
play,
with Trey Young and John Collins, and Kevin
no,
Herter
but
and
no,
Torian
just to go
Prince.
With just to go with Trey Young,
just
saying
to
the
go
trade
with
from last year, the Luka
well,
Doncic,
think...
and now you have now you see the complete trade how it came out.
Right.
So you can just throw in the Culver getting there, even though that's your pick, but you can throw in like Culver kind
well,
of.
Well, I think. I think however you project who won the deal and all that, you have to take into account where Atlanta lands and, you know, with their own pick as well, because we don't know what it would have been had they kept Luka. And like, I mean, just the butterfly effect, man, like you have to, that has to mean something. So like ultimately I hope we get Zion and then, you know, obviously like luck out on the lottery, get Zion with our pick and then, get, you know, maybe Culver or somebody else with that other pick. But, yeah, I mean, if we ended up with that package, I just don't think there's a loser. Like, because I just think Trae Young has been way better than I thought he would be. I think Luka's been exactly what I thought he would be. I just think, like, regardless, like, both teams are really fucking happy, especially if Dallas gets Kristaps back and they play well. My thing is this. I'm not going to say that either team lost the trade. I think both teams come out winners if that's the case. I will say this, though. I would rather be Atlanta in this scenario of just where they are versus where Dallas is, because if you're Dallas, you are heavily banking on Porzingis being everything that he once was. After, you know, tearing his ACL, 7'3" guy, you're banking on being able to do something with this max cap, max salary spot. A lot of people have been pointing to Nikola Vucevic, which I do think makes some sense. I do think he would be a good complement to those other two guys. But then you need some fucking, some like really defensive-minded wings, and they don't have that. Courtney Lee used to be that, kind of. Not really like a heavy defensive-minded guy, but, I mean, he played solid defense. Tim Hardaway Jr. is definitely not that. Dorian Finney-Smith could be, maybe. I still don't know, like, exactly what he is. But, like, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And then you got those two outgoing picks to the Knicks to boot. I think you could see – I could foresee a situation brewing in Dallas where the KP trade doesn't work in their favor. And in 7 or 8 years, Luka's looking at jetting, more so than I could see a situation in Atlanta of our current situation not panning out and Trey wanting to go somewhere else. I would feel way more comfortable betting on Atlanta keeping Trey after his rookie extension than Dallas keeping Luka after his rookie extension. So, like, with all those factors in play, I'm really fucking comfortable where we are now. In fact, I mean, I said it a couple weeks ago, like, regardless of whether, like, you know, a lot of my fellow Hawks fans right now are freaking out because Dallas is tanking and trying to keep that pick. I'm not really that worried about it. Like, I'm really not. Trey's been way better than I thought he would be. I don't need that pick to validate Trey anymore. To me, it's like, Trey is the clear number two rookie in this class. And yeah, we traded the number one rookie to get the number two rookie. Like, I get that. But even saying that, like, we're going to get the pick eventually. Would it be nice to get it this year where when it's like 6 or 7? Like, fuck yeah, it would be. It'd be great. But even if we don't, like, the only thing that will fucking piss me off is if somehow they get the number one pick. And then I'll be really fucking pissed because there are a multitude of reasons Dallas did not deserve to get Zion Williamson. But, like, it, short of that happening, I'll be fine. Like, I'm not that concerned about it anymore, honestly. What are your thoughts? I mean, do you think obviously you asked the question. I assume you have an answer to it, too. If the Hawks get Culver and Reddish in this draft, if they manage to swing that and only have to give up the OKC 2022 protected pick and Cleveland's, you know, 2020 protected pick, like, is that ultimately a win for you for the Hawks?
No, I'm kind of like you. I mean, I think in the end the trade is going to go down in one of those trades where there's a win for both teams. It just all panned out. Everything worked out. Luka was perfect to go to Dallas for
it's
what they
the
needed.
It's the Paul George, Victor Oladipo trade.
Yeah, it just works out.
One
for
team
all
got
time,
the better player, and the other team got a fucking great player that no one thought was going to be as great as they were. I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I was trying to always talk you and a bunch of all my other Hawks friends up the edge. I mean, I thought from the beginning. Even without, you know, just from the first, you got another draft asset out of getting your guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I see it work for my team and, you know, in the Boston Celtics. So that's why I just don't see, like, you know, you guys were high on Trae Young and that was your guy. And so you got another pick out of it. So in my mind, I just said it always was a win and it makes it better that Young's actually just showing everyone that, hey, I'm actually a pretty good player and he can pass the damn ball. So I'm with you. It's just going to go down as one of those. It was a win for both teams in the end, even though everyone overreacted at the beginning.
Yeah. No, I mean, I feel you there. All right, moving on. All right, so you got Cam. Thank you for not fucking taking Jackson Hayes. I think obviously, I think you take Cam in this particular situation of what we're doing, and then, you know, you just make a play for a defensive center in free agency. There's plenty of them out there. I mean, Willie Cauley-Stein, granted, he's a restricted free agent, but Nerlens Noel is out there. He's a name that was attached to the Hawks last offseason for, like, in rumors. So he's a guy who I could see us going after. And, like, Alex Lynn certainly isn't a defensive-minded center, but I would be perfectly comfortable with him being our starting center. I would not worry about him. He's played really well since joining the Hawks. In fact, I know you listened to Bill Simmons' podcast the other day with Ryan Russillo. I laughed out loud when Russillo was like, have you seen anything on Alex Lynn? And I'm going to go DeAndre Hunter. They need a wing. Now, Hunter's kind of interesting because he maybe projects more long-term as a four than a three. And obviously, you know, they sign Kyle Anderson to that, you know, long-term deal. He's got three more years, I think. And, like, he's kind of been better playing the four this season. But I think just like Jaren Jackson, who's currently been playing the four, but long-term we see him as a five, I could see Hunter playing the three in the short term and then transitioning to the four. He's shooting like 45% from three or something ridiculous like that. Last time I checked, it was 45. He's a great defender. He would kind of fit their MO of like grit and grind. I just think he would be a great addition, you know, for one, because I do like his upside long term, but two, I like his floor, and I like that he is a 2-year guy. He can come in and make an impact immediately, and Memphis does not want to fucking be bad next year if they get this pick this year, because their pick that's going to Boston is only top six protected next year. They can't, and, you know, have him have an awful first season. DeAndre Hunter is one of those, I would imagine when Chris Vernon comes out with his guys who will not suck draft board, DeAndre Hunter will be on that. And I would say that I think if you're in the position that Memphis is in, it just makes so much fucking sense to take DeAndre Hunter right there. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Hunter for sure. All right, Luke, your quick thoughts, and then you got the Wizards up next.
Absolutely.
I'm with you on that.
He's good, and a lot of people forget, like, the reason that Virginia flaked off and didn't do good last year in the NCAA tournament is
because they didn't have DeAndre Hunter.
Yeah, he got injured right before it, and now they're gonna like really notice. And I feel like I'm not one of those people like Virginia. They're gonna like anything can happen, but I think Virginia is gonna go a little bit further than they did last year, and it's definitely gonna be DeAndre Hunter showing people like what he has. And I do like it, like you're saying. I mean, in the end, I see Josh Jackson moving to the center. Makes sense. Slow-mo can be a sixth man too. I mean, you know, in the end, he's not a starter, so I don't feel bad. So, but yeah, I like it all for Memphis. I mean, they do need a point guard and all that, but there's no point guard really to take. So I have no issue with him right there at number seven. I think, you know, he's a good all around basketball player. For Washington though, now it gets interesting. Washington is just kind of a mess all around. They need a lot of things. You know, they traded Porter. They've got Beal. It's just up to, you know, if they want to keep Beal going or just possibly trade, but you know, they're that team that really needs a center, but they do need a wing and all that. And I've been debating over Hayes right here because, you know, I think he'd be good, but I still think it's too high for him. So I'm gonna go with the guy that I've been watching lately, and it's not that he's been doing like crazy things on the court. It's just like you look at him and you're like, yo, dude, this kid's really big. Like, he's a big for, like,
yeah, I know who
you're going to
take.
And it's Nazir Little,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Little
no, dude,
is
watching him in that Duke game.
Big.
Dude,
yes.
And
he's playing.
He played really well in that game, man. Like, and in limited minutes, seems like he's starting to kind of figure it out in a system that's not really engineered towards his style of play. So no, I mean, I don't fault you, but please go ahead.
No, yeah, like you say, I mean, definitely showed it in the Duke game. I mean, even right now he's playing, but it's just, I think, like I've been preaching on him, he's one of those players where it's not good in college just because the system's not for him and all that, and spacing on in college games very hard. So he's going to be able to do what he wants. You saw it against the Duke where he plays against better talent. I think he plays better. I mean, he's played against RJ and Cam and all them since he's younger, I mean, and all that. So definitely, you know, he's up there in that talent. But it's just like, the more I look at him, I'm like, dude, you are just really just like, look like a grown man right now. I'm like, out there, like, he's just very big for his size. And I don't know, I just like, yes, Washington would need a center, and picking Hayes is good and all that, or maybe even Bola Bola, but I don't know. I just think right now, he's going to be one of those people that he's going to be so much more successful in the NBA once he has the spacing. And if you just traded Otto Porter Jr., you kind of still need. And they also traded what's-his-face, too, early in the year to the Suns. Man, why can't I think of his name? Oubre Jr. So you don't really have any threes or slash fours, and Mazzeo can play either
right.
one of those positions for you.
Well, you got Troy Brown, who they don't play enough, but they still need, like, I think, again, he's a guy who I think projects long-term as a small four. I think that's where he fits because he's so big, man. He's only 6'6", I think, but he's a big 6'6". And I think, like, yeah, I mean, I don't hate it at all. Like, I mean, obviously they do need a center, like, they desperately. But again, like, it's just my thought process on taking a center in the top, even the top 10. Like, maybe we'll get there in this particular draft. I don't know, but like, there's so many centers out there. Like, you saw Nerlens Noel sign for a minimum deal with OKC to be their backup last season. Like, that's a guy that Washington could go after. They could be like, hey, we'll give you the luxury tax exception forever. You know, like, I mean, there's plenty of guys that you can go after there in free agency. And I think that'll drive down the cost of, or the stock rather of centers in the draft this season and potentially just going forward in general, a very different kind of center to garner a lot of attention. And we even saw it this offseason. I mean, Clint Capella, he didn't get nearly the contract that he wanted. I mean, I think he got the contract he deserved, maybe even a little more. But I don't think you're going to see, like, players of his ilk getting max-level contracts like Gobert did or Steven Adams did. I don't think you're going to see that from most teams going forward, and I think that also kind of it will reflect in the draft as well. All right, so moving on, number nine. Who am I right here? New Orleans or Minnesota? I think New Orleans. Yeah, New Orleans. Okay, New Orleans. I need a wing. I need a fucking wing, man. Like, I probably need a center too, but I'm going to try to re-sign Julius Randle. Even though that might be a lost cause. But I mean, regardless of what happens with any sort of trades or anything, I need a wing. I probably need a point guard, though. I feel like I can run a backcourt of Etuan Moore and Drew Holiday, and be okay. You know, cause I, if I'm New Orleans, I don't want to suck. I can't tank in New Orleans. I'm going to take Keldon Johnson. He's fallen. I had him as high as 5 earlier in the season. And he's fallen I had him at 7. I think now I have him at around 9 or 10, which is right where we are. I still really like, you look at his numbers, like, sure, there's a little bit to be desired as far as the way he plays. With P.J. Washington just being the clear-cut go-to guy on that team, as he should be this season. He's got the experience. He knows the system. They kind of have built this young squad around him. He doesn't get as many touches as he should. He's really good at driving to the basket, though. You know, his ball handling leaves a lot to be desired. So you're going to have to utilize him correctly. But pairing him with Drew Holiday makes a lot of sense on a lot of levels. So I'm going to draft him and put him at the three, and kind of try to develop him with Drew Holiday, and then hopefully re-sign Julius Randle, and then hopefully get, you know, a package that includes a point guard and a power forward, you know, like a stretch four, amongst other things, in the package that I, you know, trade with, for Anthony Davis. So I mean, that's kind of where my mindset is right now. What do you think about that?
No, yeah, I mean, I like it. I mean, me and you've been high on Johnson. I think he's a great player. I think a lot of what happened to him kind of slipping at the end of the season, it's just because Travis Reed getting injured for them, for Kentucky. I really think that hurt the whole flow of the team and all that, and it put more back on Johnson and all that. And so, but I think he's handling fine. I think, you know, once Travis Reed's back and all that, you'll see back to who everyone thought he was going to be in Johnson. And so I like it here. I mean, they're just one of those teams that just they need. That could be one positional need that they need. I mean, this next pick that I have, it's just a mess of like who, what, like Charlotte, man. Hopefully Kim is gone. So you're obviously going to a full rebuild, but it's like at number 10, it makes it tough to like who's starting the whole rebuild prospect. I mean, yeah, you got Malik Monk and you got Miles Bridges.
Yeah.
So you got those two, but they're not like anything like super. So you're basically getting another one of those players that could have possible upside.
Right.
I mean, Langford, Bola Bol, and Kevin Porter from USC. Because, you know, all of them have a lot of upside.
None of which
and big potential.
Positional needs, unfortunately. Like,
I understand, but you're not. Charlotte's not in a need for position right now.
Right.
You're in the need of who's the next best possible to get you
upside
something
guy.
That's going to be like, That's
no,
what I'm saying.
I mean,
there's other people that make sense, but those are the three right now in my mind that like could have the upside. And man, it's really tough. But I'm gonna go with Porter. I'm gonna go with Kevin Porter.
I like him.
He kind of
reminds
me
head
of
case,
like
but...
a young. He seems like a head case, and you can calm him down and like and fix that. It kind of reminds me of like a younger D Wade. Where he
okay.
can do it all.
I don't see that, but I
younger.
I,
think, you gotta,
I will say this. I do think there may be some luxury. Michael Jordan is not like a calming influence by any means, but I think he's learned a little bit of tranquility in his golden years. I think if you could get Porter to sit down with Jordan. And you know, Jordan to be like, yo, dude, like, look, I see the fucking skills. Like, work with me. Like, let's work together. Like, I see these skills in you that I really want to work with you. And, like, what fucking draft prospect is going to, like, shun that? Like, you get an opportunity to fucking work with Michael Jordan. Like, that's the kind of thing that I think could maybe play in this favor. My question, I don't dislike pick. I actually think, because Bowles got the injury concern and you got Hernan Gomez and Zeller signed on for 3 more years. My question is, then what do you do with Malik Monk? Would you try to trade him for a point guard?
I mean, I think it's been – Malik's always been one of those players, I mean, coming out of Kentucky where it's like they – even at Kentucky, they try to run him at the point guard because they're like, knew where the
point guard.
I know he's not a point guard, but he's not really a shooting guard. I mean, he's a great shooter and all that, but he's just like the size and all that, and like his defensive like limitations and all that. So you saw it even in Kentucky where they like tried multiple times where Malik would take up the ball and all that, and it used to always scare me just because like he's so turnover prone, he doesn't understand it. So it does, but like I'm saying, you can play them all right now. I mean, one's got to hit. I mean, maybe now that Kim is gone and Malik getting more playing time. I mean, Porter's not going to be jumping into the starting shooting
right.
guard. Porter's, yeah, he wouldn't jump in there, so you could definitely play the two of them right now and figure it out later on who is all that. But
yeah,
I do understand because Monk isn't a point guard and all that, but I just, for right now, I just think, you know, you keep them both. You finally let the leash go on Malik Monk and really let's see what he can do and all that. But don't force him. He's not a point guard. He just, I don't think he has the decision-making skills to do it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I see where you're coming from. Yeah, I mean, I think maybe you just play them both on the court at the same time and have them kind of share the ball. I mean, fuck, maybe even you try to get the ball in Batum's hands and let him kind of manage because he's a good facilitator. At least in the half-court set, I wouldn't want him bringing the ball up the court. But if you could position him at the top of the key to be the guy who, like, sort of controls the offense, similar to the way Denver does with Jokic, maybe that's how you run that offense, you know, absent Kemba Walker, and maybe that works. Because, I mean, I obviously Monk's more the size of a traditional point guard, so, like, that might be the way that you can maximize that roster construction now, and then you look at trading one of them mid-season at the trade deadline or maybe next off-season or something like that. I think – but I do like where your head's at because I think you got to get Malik Monk's stock back up before you trade him because I think you're selling really low right now. And I still personally, I haven't given up on him yet. I still think he was never going to work next to Kemba Walker. That's the problem. Like, it's not that pairing defensively is a nightmare. And, you know, which is interestingly enough why when they took Shea last year, I was like, I like this. Like, I really like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Malik Monk as a backcourt for the future because Malik Monk is a little undersized as a shooting guard. Shea is like this bigger 6'6" point guard. This makes a lot of sense. And then they traded him, which kind of made sense for the here and now, but long term, I think I would rather have Shea than Miles. Not that Miles has been bad or isn't a good player. I just think that I think long term I would rather have that pairing and just have traded Kemba and gotten what I could have gotten for him. But, you know, hey, it is what it is. And, you know, maybe Kemba resigns. You know, if he gets, makes an all-NBA team and qualifies for a Supermax, that's a lot of money to turn down, especially I know everyone says, what's the difference between, you know, $150 million or $160 million and, you know, $210 million, you know, at that point. Like, yeah, but this is a guy who has been underpaid his whole career. So if anybody needed to, like, cash in at this point in time, it's Kemba Walker. So there is a possibility that they can keep him. But, no, I mean, I'm smelling what you're selling. I definitely see the upside there, and I like it more than the Bol Bol upside. I would not take him that high. Just it's so many concerns with him. Orlando. It's pretty obvious for me here, given that he's fallen this far for us. Romeo Langford. He's not been good. he's kind of been like Nazir Little, to where he just hasn't really ever hit a stride this season, hasn't really played up to his potential. Now, his reasons are different than Little's, but he's been disappointing, but if you're in that 10-11 range and you got a guy who's still got like a super high ceiling, you especially if you're Orlando, you go with that high ceiling guy. There's not a point guard in this range that makes sense for your team. So I just think fit and everything else, you go with Langford. And honestly, if I'm Orlando, like, I think it would be very short-sighted to bring back Terrence Ross and Vucevic. I really think they should have traded them at the deadline and just gotten what they could get for them. They wanted to make a playoff push, but, like, don't double down on your mistake thinking you could make the playoffs. That was a worthy thing to do. Don't double down on that mistake by re-signing these guys. Keep your flexibility open. Rebuild the right way. Get Mo Bamba the playing time once he's healthy. And maybe look at the young roster that you have and seeing what you can get for Aaron Gordon and you know, retooling with all rookie contract guys. And then, you know, the following season, you can maybe bring in some veterans. Or maybe even this season you can bring in some veterans to kind of coach these guys up. You still got Fournier. You still got Augustine. You just got Markelle Fultz. So, you know, if you're thinking long-term, I just think that would make more sense. And I think Romeo Langford could fit in with that kind of game plan. What are your thoughts?
No, yeah, I mean, I like it. Like you're saying, Orlando should just commit to going with the full rebuild. You know, they probably won't, and they won't make the right – but seeing the Markelle Fultz trade kind of made me feel like they were going in that direction. Like, it was a smart trade for them. You know, he's still young and all that. But he's not going to be able to play with Vucevic and all that and make them compete next year. So I thought that their mindset was like, you know, we'll take the risk, the flyer on Fultz just because we're going to go young. So hopefully they make the right choice. And I like it. I mean, like you said, Lakers definitely falling off lately. And it's just not him. It's the whole Indiana team just bad. It is just really bad. And
right.
He's not one of those players that can just hold his team and all that. I mean, even though, like, he still can score and all that, it's just a lot of pressure when your whole team's just really bad like that. So I like it. I mean, it's a smart pick. I mean, he's definitely up there on, like, the next best available and all that. So, I think it's a smart pick for Orlando. And, you know, hopefully they do commit to the whole rebuild. Lakers, on the other hand, we're probably hoping. I mean, that you might skip on because Lakers are just another team. They're like a Charlotte. There's a lot of things you can do with the Lakers. Are you trading? What are you doing? So I'm going with the center position just because there's a couple centers out there that I think that could be really good and all that, and you just always need a good defensive-minded center just to help anchor a LeBron team who's never really had one. Bola Bola would be kind of interesting there. I just feel like his injury concerns and all that, and he's kind of big, and I don't think he could play at the speed at LeBron, even though the pace of LeBron and all that in the Lakers, and he's not the – but
yeah.
Still, I think it'd be too fast for Bola, but I'm going to have to take my guy, Jackson Hayes from Texas. I think, you know.
Makes sense.
He's definitely just done a lot this year where he's just come out of nowhere. Just blocking machine, can definitely run. He's just very young. He has the legs right now. He's not a, because he's almost like a JaVale McGee. Like, you're not getting the big upgrade, so it's not like, oh, yay, you know, we got a good position. But he definitely can be, like, you know, a younger, better JaVale McGee at one point. I mean, he definitely got more defensive-minded and all that, so you can definitely run the lobs and all that. So I just like him just for the whole defensive purpose of, like, you need a defensive center. Yeah, a shooting center makes more sense and all that, but the Lakers didn't make the right choice in signing Lopez last year, so I don't know why they would go right next year, this upcoming year, and get a shooting center. So might as well get a defensive-minded center in Hayes.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like, too, as a trade asset at that point in the draft, like, people are really high on him right now. A lot of people have him like as high as like 6, 7, 8 in the mocks or in their player board. I think I have him at 11. And a lot of me having him at 11 is not, you know, it's really not throwing any kind of shade at him. It's just that I think he's going to be really good. I mean, I do. I think he's going to be a Clint Capela type. I really do. I just don't value that as highly as I value the ceilings of all of these other guys. So though I think if you were to ask me if I was had to bet on long-term who's going to be better, you know, Romeo Langford or Jackson Hayes, I would probably bet Jackson Hayes. But nevertheless, like, Romeo Langford still has so much more potential to be the better, more impactful player long-term. So, you know, I mean, it's a discrepancy on floor versus ceiling. I understand why people value floor more than ceiling. And that's, you know, the people who have Hayes so high. And I get that. I understand it. I think with this league being more of a wing-driven league nowadays, I just personally would not – I just wouldn't want to take him that high, you know. But here, at this current spot, I'm very much cool with that. I think, honestly, again, like, just for, if nothing else, the draft consideration, like, I mean, think about it this way. If you are trying to put a package together for Anthony Davis, now you're sending him back a point guard, a shooting guard, small forward, a power forward, and a center. You're sending him back or at least the opportunity to send them back every single position. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense for so many reasons for the Lakers, flexibility, everything else. So, yeah, I'm on board with it. I like it. I think it's ultimately a smart pick for them going, you know, getting somebody who, if they end up keeping, can protect the rim and everything else. But if they end up shipping out, you know, it works too. All right, Minnesota. Minnesota's tricky, man, because, again, I think long-term they really need a point guard. But there's not I'm not reaching on Trey Jones here at 13. I just feel like that is just a little too much of a reach for me. So you got to really look at what else they need. I really like Josh Okogie. I think he's solid. I think he's going to be a fine starting shooting guard. He plays defense. He can shoot. He gives you what you need. They don't need anything at the three or the four or the center, though. I think there's a distinct possibility that they could maybe try to package this pick with, say, if somebody would take, like, let's say, let me pose this question. You're picking at 13 here. If you're Memphis, would you entertain the notion of sending them Mike Connolly in exchange for Jeff Teague and some sort of cap filler? I don't want to throw in what's his name? Their fucking backup center, Gorgie
Andrew
Jane.
Wiggins? No, you could throw in Andrew Wiggins. You could figure out how to throw Andrew Wiggins for Minnesota.
Yeah.
No, honestly, it's the 13th in Wiggins might be worth it for Conley. I'm just saying, I mean, the way Memphis is going, you're getting some guy that could possibly do it and he's young, and you're flipping a guy that's older and his money's getting crazy. So you're getting another first-round pick, so... I mean, maybe.
Okay, so let's play this scenario out, because I like this. I think this is more fun than trying to pick for Minnesota here. So you're trading for Mike Connolly because you want to make the playoffs, you want to be good, and you're getting off a Wiggins contract, which you don't trust. And so if you're Memphis, you're getting Wiggins, who, you know, I feel like you're thinking, okay, we can potentially make this work, but we need to get Teague back because we need at least a point guard for this season. So, you know, we get Teague, we get Wiggins, and we send you Conley and let's say Kyle Anderson. I think that makes the money all line up, right? And Anderson's a little more of a long-term contract, so you get off of that. So Wiggins' long-term contract doesn't hurt as much. you know, so let's I mean, I feel like that's respectable, right? Like if I mean, you're getting the better player in Conley, you're getting a you know, $8-10 million a year guy, who you know, in slow-mo, who can come off your bench and be a contributor. So if you're looking in turn, what do you want to pick up here if you're Memphis? So let's see, we picked up DeAndre Hunter earlier. You're getting Wiggins, so that would now be probably your one, your 3, 4, and 5 of the future would be Wiggins, Hunter, and JJJ.
Jen.
So if you're Memphis, you know, you got Jeff Teague to get you through the season. At that point, you know, what are you thinking here? I'm maybe thinking Nikhil Alexander Walker. I think that makes sense. I mean, he's shooting guard, 6'5". He can get you some buckets. 17.4 points per game right now. 4.2 assists. So he's kind of like that tweener, that kind of combo guard. So maybe you could transition him to a point guard. I mean, I think that would make the most sense as far as roster construction for them. What are your thoughts?
No, I mean, I like it. It does make sense. But honestly, I'm kind of going with the reach player, and I'm surprised you didn't name him. But I like Coby White for North Carolina. Might not come out. He's still really young, but, you know, you could get your point guard right now if you're Memphis. Yeah, you're rolling with Teague this year, but you're going to have Coby next year. And I don't know, if you just really watch him on North Carolina, he just is like, he doesn't look like a freshman out there. He does a lot of, like, the right things. He's figured out the system right now. He has them really playing well. He's pretty big for his size, too, for playing, because he can play probably the shooting guard, point guard. He can probably switch him out and all that. Yeah, he's a reach and all that, but I do feel like he'll improve his stock as into the, like, tournament goes on, because North Carolina's success definitely is contributed to how well he's been playing. I mean, he's still young. Like I said, I could see him possibly staying for one more year, but I could see both, even if Minnesota didn't end up trading this pick, I could definitely see him being that reach, like, should we just take a flyer on Coby White?
Because he's been
playing really well. And, you know, he's still young and all that and figuring it out and everything. So I just think, you know, he makes sense for me for both, even if Memphis takes him or Minnesota takes him. But I do like what you're saying with Nikhil Alexander. I mean, he would make sense there too.
Okay, you've convinced me. So I'm, you know, namely, you've convinced me because I don't think Memphis would take. I don't think they would fucking take Andrew Wiggins. I don't like. I if I was Memphis, I would not take Andrew Wiggins. Why would you want that fucking contract?
Why not though?
I'd rather even.
But hear me out. Hear me out on it. I know you're laughing, but hear me out on it. If you're Memphis, you're another one of those teams where you cannot go full tank in Memphis. Like, yeah, you have the grit and grind, but that was the old thing. I mean, you have a good
family.
Yeah, but
if you don't want to go full tank, then you should not be getting Andrew Wiggins.
But hear me out. But Wiggins still has the pull. Like, he has the chance of being, like, a face of, like, you can still make him the face of the organization. You're not throwing it on one of these,
sure,
these young kids. He can take that pressure off of them. He still can have a chance to where it's, like, it's back to being Andrew Wiggins' team. I mean, before Carl Anthony Towns, even in the first year with Cat, you could kind of see, like, Wiggins. I mean, he's still got the offensive capabilities, and if he just puts his heart. So, like, you're losing a Conley contract where he's getting older and all that, and his money's getting crazy, and you're not going to be competing where you can get, yeah, a contract that sucks, but you still, Andrew Wiggins is still so young. He has so much still, like, upside and all that, and he can be the face of the team for now and take that in for Memphis and be that face as you're going through this little transition period. So that's why I don't see why you wouldn't do it. I mean, yes, Wiggins is terrible,
okay,
and all that in that contract, but it's just like you're already spending money on Conley, but you can be in it.
Well, here's the thing. If you're playing the role of Memphis here and you're willing to take the deal, if I'm Minnesota, I'm probably willing to make that deal. Because I do not want to have Andrew Wiggins on my books long term. So if I can get like a reasonable package and maybe give me a second rounder, like give me something. You gotta give me something in addition. But like, yeah, I think I would probably take it. You know, simply because getting Connolly, man, that I feel like that would just make me like a true playoff team. Like I said, Kyle Anderson would be a good fit. So as long as I can get some kind of like future asset, you know, a unprotected second rounder, future, which I don't feel like if you're that gung ho on Wiggins, I don't feel like you would be have a strong objection to. So like we'll just call it that and that'll be good. All right, we got 3 minutes to wrap this up. Final pick, your Boston Celtics. Who you taking?
So this one's interesting because, you know, there's a lot of ways, but I think there's kind of a guy, and like he's never been really high on the board, but I've been actually really high on him lately, and I mean he's been on a lot of people's board, but I'm gonna go with Brandon Clark, power forward Gonzaga, man.
Yeah,
I feel like, you know, he could be our next Al Horford. I just really just see a lot in Brandon Clark. He just really, if you watch the Gonzaga team, it's just like he calms them all down. He understands everything that's going out there. He's just a smart player. There's nothing flashy to him. I mean, I'm not going to give him Al Horford 2.0, but I mean, he kind of just reminds me of it. He makes sense. I mean, we don't need a center and all that. I like, you know, Ronald Williams and all that. And, you know, Danny always loves his guards and all that, but there's nothing really out there. But I don't know. I just really like Brandon Clark. I mean, yeah, you could go with the other power forward in Rio, but I don't know. Clark just seems like he makes sense. He's just that vet, and just to go on the Celtics team, like he could just still help them and play now and give them some decent minutes than taking a guy that has potential and waiting for his upside.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like the pick, man. I really do. I think ultimately – he's a guy who, again, high floor guy to me. But I think if you're Boston, you have so many of these picks, I think you're probably better off picking high floor guys. Cause if you get enough high floor guys, they're great in as far as trade assets. We saw it with Robert Covington and Dario Saric, netted and a second round pick netted the Sixers, Jimmy Butler. Like, if you've got those kind of guys to throw in with some of the other guys that you have, you're like Boston's always going to be in the mix for trade packages because they have such a smart GM, and getting guys like that only helps your cause. So yeah, no, I'm fucking with you there, man. I like it. All right, well that's going to wrap it up for this edition of our second mock draft. As a Hawks fan, I fucking love it. Came away with Culver and Cam Reddish. I think that's fucking awesome. we're going to have to really get into a full draft. We might have to do back-to-back episodes to get all those picks in, or just rapid fire, if you will. Luke, thanks for joining me, man. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for having me. Peace out, man.
Peace, brother. All right, everybody, be sure to keep a lookout for Geek Vibes Live. It'll be coming at you this Sunday at 8 o'clock. And Dane Alves, Wrestling Geeks Alliance show is now streaming, recorded last night at 7, so be sure to check that out. We will see you next Tuesday. Until then, peace.